From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, psychic powers. Here's what's happening. Western nations are rushing to evacuate people from Afghanistan with less than a week left until all foreign troops are supposed to leave, acknowledging that many Afghans who helped them will be left behind at some uncertain fate under the Taliban rule. Every American, they say, in Afghanistan should be able to get out of by the deadline of August 31st, according to a Pentagon spokesperson, John Kirby, but he said he was less clear about what will happen to the unknown number of Afghans who aided America over the past 20 years and have been trying desperately to flee the country in recent weeks. In a moment, our special guest, Troy Anderson, talks about biblical prophecy. Afghanistan will come up. Howard Bloom, author of The Mohammed Code, is with us now. Howard, I wanted you to check into this situation. We'll talk a little bit about my thoughts when you're done with your report, but this is a disaster.
It's a disaster. It was a huge mistake for President Trump to negotiate a pullout from Afghanistan with the Taliban, and it was a huge mistake for President Biden to pull out. Now, here are the latest facts. As of this afternoon, we had evacuated 82,000 people from Afghanistan. There are 300,000 people in danger of execution, imprisonment, or abuse by the Taliban, according to the International Rescue Committee. These are people who desperately need to get out. The Taliban have only been in power for 10 days, but according to the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, there have already been harrowing reports of summary executions of civilians and of Afghan soldiers. A month ago, the Taliban issued an order to mullahs and imams in territories it had captured to turn over a list of all girls above 15 and widows under 45. Jeez. So they can be sent to a distant province, given as brides to the victorious Taliban warriors, be converted to the Taliban's punishing version of Islam, and be, quote, reintegrated. In other words, be beaten down and brainwashed. And Jordan's Al-Bawaba News reports that Taliban forces are accused of forcibly marrying girls as young as 12 years old and turning them into sex slaves as they impose their, and this is what Al-Bawaba News calls it, their terrifying vision of Islam. On top of all that, the Afghan disaster may have lost us our position as the world's leading superpower. Both Japan and the European Union have said they can't rely on us to defend them anymore. So why are so many people trying to get out of Afghanistan? When the Taliban says it will give women the freedom accorded by Sharia law, that means the freedom to be married off at the age of 15 or younger, the freedom to be imprisoned in a house for the rest of your life, and the freedom to be wrapped in a walking tent, a burqa. All of these things, says militant Islam, are ways of honoring a woman. When the Taliban speaks of human rights, it is referring to the obligations and duties of Islam, which it considers the only rights worth having. For example, the right to be crushed to death if you are homosexual, the right to have your hand chopped off if you steal, or the right to have your tongue cut out if you are accused of committing perjury. Hafiz Sadiqullah Hassani, a former member of the Taliban secret police, reported that he received the following instructions from his boss, the Taliban secret police commandante, during the Taliban's first reign over Afghanistan in the 1990s. Quote, "You must become so notorious for bad things that when you come into an area, people will tremble in their sandals. Anyone can do beatings and starve people. I want your unit to find new ways of torture so terrible that the screams will frighten even the crows from their nests, and if the person survives, he will never again have a night's sleep." Then there was the Taliban's war of extermination against what it calls heretics, specifically the Hazara Shiites in Afghanistan's northern territories. Human rights organization called this murder of women and children genocide. The bottom line is that we have failed to see something crucial about our role in Afghanistan. Nation building is a valid project. It can be done, but it's a multi-generational project. We've been in South Korea since 1945. For the first 42 years, things were chaotic and corrupt. But after 1987, the country became democratic, and it went from poverty to one of the world's richest nations, in part because our military has been there for 76 years. To achieve our goals in Afghanistan, we'd have had to hang in there until the kids raised in secularism and modernism could rise to power, and that's at least another 20 years. Instead, we've abandoned those kids to a savage fate.
And Howard, I've got to tell you, though, we should never have gone in there the way we did. The mission was to get Osama bin Laden. We did not get him until 10 years later. We should have leveled that Tora Bora mountain that they thought he was hiding in and then got out. We never even needed to send any troops in there. What do you think?
Well, I agree with the sentiment, except Afghanistan is the hinge of Asia. It's got China on one side, Iran on the other side, Russia to the north. Saudi Arabia is used to meddling in there. The Pakistani ISI, their secret police, their CIA, created the Taliban in order to take over Afghanistan. China is about to make it a part of its Belt and Road Initiative. China is about to take advantage of $1 trillion worth of natural resources, things like rare earth minerals and metals in Afghanistan. We could have been there preventing that kind of thing. Russia, by the way, is also playing for influence in there. It's had meetings with the Taliban. It's, I believe, taken the head of the Taliban to Moscow at one point for negotiations of some kind. We could have been playing a central role in there and keeping China from owning the huge pathway in Asia that goes all the way from China's ports to Spain, which is what China is after. And it's a big deal. It's something that's going to change the world, and it's going to change the balance of power, and it's going to put China in the driver's seat for the rest of the 22nd or 21st century.
Thank you, Howard. But watch out for Iraq. That could be the next problem. And again, folks, do not, please, do not feel badly towards our troops. They were doing what they were ordered to do. They are heroes, as far as I'm concerned. Sirhan Sirhan, convicted of the 1968 assassination of Robert F. Kennedy, will face a California parole board for the 16th time this Friday in a prison outside of San Diego. But unlike the first 15 times, no prosecutor at this point will stand to oppose the release of Sirhan, who is now 77 years old. Sirhan was arrested at the scene of Kennedy's shooting in Los Angeles on June 5, 1968, convicted of first-degree murder, sentenced to death for the assassination of the U.S. senator who appeared headed for the Democratic presidential nomination. Well, they did away with the death penalty in California, but he is up for parole, and he might be given it. We shall see. I'll make sure we have reports for you on that. Protection against COVID-19 offered by two doses of the Pfizer BioNTech and the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccines begins to fade within 6 months, folks, underscoring the need for booster shots, according to researchers in Britain. Military troops must immediately begin to get COVID-19 vaccines, according to the defense secretary in a memo ordering service leaders to impose ambitious timelines for implementation. More than 800,000 service members have yet to get their shots, according to the Pentagon. They plan to start screening for type 2 diabetes early at the age of 35, according to a task force. About 34.2 million Americans are living with diabetes, and about 10% of the U.S. population, according to statistics, and they don't even know that they have it. Drinking 8 glasses of water a day is an age-old recommendation, which doctors say keeps your body healing and healthy. Now a new study reveals getting enough water not only prevents dehydration, but may also keep your heart from failing decades later. So drink water, folks. There are still new rules from the Treasury Department. Free rent if you can attest that you need it. Here's registered investment advisor Mish Sedlock with us. Mish, what do you think of that?
That's all you need to do. You don't have to prove anything. All you have to do, it's a new rule out today, by the way, that says all you have to do is just make a statement that you're going to have a financial hardship, you're risking homelessness, or you don't have enough income to pay rent. Now, the sad thing about all of this, George, is they've allocated $46.7 billion for this. Half of that came in March of 2020. Less than 10% of that money. We've spent $4 to $5 billion out of that $47 billion. Meanwhile, we have mom and pop landlords renting out units. They cannot evict people at all who don't pay. And these people don't have an incentive to pay as long as this eviction moratorium is going
on. Right. Now, what happens to the mortgage payments that the bill owners of the buildings need to pay? Do they also say, I can't pay?
They don't have that luxury, nor, George, do they have the luxury of filing on behalf of the tenant. They can't say, my tenant is not paying, and I don't think he can afford to pay. So it's all a big shamble here. I thought that after the Supreme Court made that ruling, which they did, Justice Kavanaugh came out and said, you know what, we're going to grant you one more month. We're going to extend this one more month. But guess what? States said, okay, you know, we're going to reimplement these programs anyway. No case has made it back to the Supreme Court. Now there's some states in the South that are evicting, but you know, the states with the big cities, the big liberal cities, Illinois, New York, whatever, still have these moratoriums on, and I guess landlords are at the mercy of judges. That's what it comes down to. If a judge, you know, believes that there should be no evictions, that's what that guy's facing, and they can't evict him, George.
Talk to you next week, Mitch. Thank you for that report. Appreciate it. Up next, Troy Anderson joins us, the Babylon Code, the military guide to Armageddon. We're going to talk about biblical prophecy and what does it mean to all of us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Let me tell you about our guest, Troy Anderson, a Pulitzer Prize-nominated investigative journalist, best-selling author. A couple of his books include The Military Guide to Armageddon, The Babylon Code, senior editor of Godspeed Magazine, former executive editor of Charisma Magazine and Charisma Media, and a reporter at the Los Angeles Daily News. He spent two decades as a reporter, bureau chief, editorial writer at the Los Angeles Daily News as well, the Press Enterprise, and other newspapers. He now writes also for Reuters, Newsmax, Town Hall, Christianity Today, and other media outlets. He is the founder and editor-in-chief of Prophecy Investigators, and he and his partner, Paul McGuire, have written more books than you can imagine. But welcome back, Troy. It's good to have you.
Hi, George. It's great to be on your show.
And you've great experience. My gosh, you've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, I've been a journalist for about three decades now, and it's just been quite a journey, quite an adventure.
What got you interested in biblical prophecy with all your news background?
So I guess the story sort of begins when I was little. My grandmother would spend hours talking to me about my ancestor, Friedrich von Schiller. He's the poet and playwright who wrote Ode to Joy, that Beethoven set to music in the Ninth Symphony.
That's right.
Well-known plays like William Tell and Marie Stuart and Maid of Orleans. So anyways, one of his first plays helped inspire the French Revolution. And then later in his life, he was supposedly, I ran across this book by a Swedish journalist who got in hold of some recently released KGB files. And he claimed in the book that towards the end of Schiller's life, he was writing a play that was going to expose some atrocities of some kind of 18th century secret society. And so when I was little, my grandma would tell me all this intrigue about him, and he died mysteriously, and he was hastily buried in the middle of the night, and there was some kind of powerful forces behind the scenes, and they had something to do with it. So she sort of planted the seed. And then when I was 11, all these Jesus people sort of show up in my hometown, their VW buses. And one of the guys that actually trained under Hal Lindsey at the UCLA Light and Powerhouse Seminary, he gave me a copy of The Late Great Planet Earth when I was 11. I was just, you know, fascinated with that book. And so flash forward, you know, I become a reporter at newspapers. And so in 2009, I'm a reporter at the LA Daily News. And somebody tells me about this Bible prophecy conference at Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills. And so I thought, oh, that'd probably be pretty interesting to go cover that. So I talked to my editor and to let me go cover that. So I go there. There's probably like 3,000 people there. Paul McGuire speaking, Tim LaHaye, all these, you know, prophecy experts.
The giants of prophecy. The giants of prophecy, right?
Yeah, exactly. So Paul speaking, I hear him say, the world is undergoing the greatest transformation since the Tower of Babel, becoming global government, cashless society, and universal religion. And when you said that, it just sort of struck me. If this is true, this is a gigantic story. And so I introduced myself to Paul. This is back in 2009. And he gave me a copy of one of his first, early books, The Day the Dollar Died. And so it delved in all this stuff about the Illuminati and Skull and Bones and secret societies and prophecy. It was just a very fascinating book. And we became friends, and he started calling me on a regular basis, sort of urging me to help him, write some books together. And so that was sort of the beginning of this, what became a, now like an 11-year investigation into Bible prophecy and end time events. And here recently, people have, commented on our, different, social media and that kind of thing, saying that many things we wrote in these books is beginning to happen. And so that's sort of the story in a nutshell.
Your partner, Paul McGuire, will be our guest on September 5th. So I'm looking forward to talking with him, Troy, as well.
Oh, that's great. Great news.
Now, when we talk about biblical prophecy, the word end times comes up a lot. Is that what you're dealing with as well?
Yeah, this is sort of the category this greater topic of Bible prophecy, end times. Are we really, that's the question I've essentially been investigating, is are we really moving into these end time events that the Bible talks about, these book of Revelation, Daniel, Matthew 24, these different parts of the Bible that talk about this, is this really happening? And so I've done, hundreds of interviews with, major faith leaders, but also, experts in Harvard and Princeton and Yale, existential risk institutes and political science and military intelligence, to sort of try to find the most credible people I could possibly find, and try to find out, are we really moving into these events that the Bible talks about? And some of the key things is this whole push for globalization, this global government, maybe a possible some kind of new international system, socialist system or something. And then all the great disasters that are happening. Has there been an increase in the intensity and extremes of all these natural disasters? The Bible talks about earthquakes and plagues and things of this nature. Now we're seeing these things happen. And all these new technologies, and genetic engineering and artificial intelligence, and is all that stuff in the Bible. So I've been, delving into this for the last decade.
Well, great timing, too, because biblical prophecy seems to be the in thing these days. I mean, years ago, as you talk about biblical prophecy, a lot of people were skeptical about that. But right now, it seems to be very trendy, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, for 2,000 years, there's been numerous people that have made predictions saying, this on this date is going to be the end of the world. And, of course, all these predictions were untrue. And so there's been, many, many different times where people have made these predictions. And so, and even in our lifetime, there's been all kinds of predictions made, and they've not come true. So people have become, for a long time, became quite skeptical about Bible prophecy, and especially the more sensationalistic interpretations of it. But in recent years, like there was just a poll that came out from Lifeway Research. It said 9 in 10 pastors now see signs of the end times and current events. And then there was a poll by Barna about a decade ago, said 8 in 10 evangelical Christians, and I think it was something like 40 to 50% of just everybody believes that we're about living in the biblical end times, and of course there's lots of books out there that delve into this, and so especially since the coronavirus pandemic hit, and this plague, and the lockdowns, loss of freedoms, the push for this. This globalization, a lot of people sort of wake up now and go, maybe is this stuff really happening?
I think so too, and it's not religious by any means, is it?
Yeah, I mean, there's different interpretations among different religions and different belief systems about what's happening, but there's across the board, it's almost like everybody is wondering what is happening here, and there seems to be this global awakening that's occurred in the last 5-10 years, and really accelerated in the last year and a half. Just people really waking up, going, "Wow, these things are happening fast, and the world is changing like we've never seen before." And what is happening here? So this is a topic on most thinking people's minds.
We're going to come back in just a moment, Troy, and talk more about your works. I want to get into the Babylon Code, and then we'll also get into the Military Guide to Armageddon. We'll take calls with Troy Anderson next hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. George Norrie along with Troy Anderson, author of several books, including The Military Guide to Armageddon and The Babylon Code. The Babylon Code you wrote with Paul McGuire. Tell us about this and your thoughts on this one, Troy.
Yeah, so when Paul and I started working on this book, I think it was like 2013 or so, in one of my conversations he mentioned that there's a code in the Bible, and that sort of caught my attention. And as we delved into this, that there's many mysteries throughout the Bible, and one of the most enigmatic is called Mystery Babylon in Revelation 17 and 18. And the book Revelation is sort of takes the entire Bible, in fact, much of the imagery from the Old Testament, sort of condenses it all in this one, phantasmagoria of a book that talks about the end times. And so we started exploring this, and if you remember back in Genesis, it talks about the Tower of Babel story. And so, after the flood, the people of God had told people to scatter across the earth, but they gathered in what's now modern-day Iraq and built this great tower. And there's some, speculation this could have some kind of, astrological significance, some kind of worship, maybe even some kind of spiritual portal, something like that, could bring entities from other dimensions into our plane. But, the story talks about this Tower of Babel, essentially the Nimrod that helped create the first sort of bringing the world together, the first time they had sort of a one world, government, economic system, religion. And then throughout the Bible, you have all these references to Babylon. It's the second most referenced city other than Jerusalem throughout the Old Testament. And then it reemerges as this mystery Babylon in Revelation 17, 18. And so the Babylon Code sort of unpacks this mystery. What is this all about? What is this final system that's ultimately destroyed, towards the end of the book Revelation? Is it some kind of occult connections to it? Is it some kind of belief system? Is it a world government? And so that the book explores all that, and then it features all this, interviews of all kinds of great experts and documentation sort of unpack this mystery.
And is there anything supernatural about the Babylon Code?
Oh, yeah. It's a very supernatural thing. Essentially, what we conclude without, trying to give away too much is that there's going to, the Bible talks about this end-time religious system that'll emerge, and the Antichrist and false prophet will preside over this global religion, this global government system, and an economic system. It says, Revelation 13, you can't buy or sell unless you have the mark of the beast. And so, today we're seeing, all these technologies and things that could be precursors for this system. I mean, for the first time in history, we have, microchip implants all these the different things we're seeing today. And even, people are now calling that you literally can't build, we won't be able to buy and sell unless you do certain things today. So we're seeing this kind of thing emerging and push for it. And so, the question we look at in this book is, are we moving into this mystery Babylon system?
Well, a lot of people think the mark of the beast could be all kinds of things. Some people even think that it might be the vaccine, the way they're forcing people to, mandate these. They just announced today that the military, everybody's got to get shots. Now, I was in the Navy for 9 years. They mandated shots then. I mean, I got a malaria shot, Troy, that swelled my arm up for 3 days. I mean, it was horrible. But the military, I guess, has that right to do that. But when you look at the mark of the beast, or you can't buy, you can't sell, which is in Revelation, what does that mean to you?
Well, yeah, I mean, if we come to a point where, you can't buy or sell unless you take this mark of the beast, of course the Bible warns if you do take this, you'll be eternally lost. But this is one of I think one of the great concerns that people have today with everything you're seeing, with the vaccines and everything. Could this be some kind of precursor, or is the international deep state sort of testing us, seeing how far they can push things? Are there things set, plan for the future that could actually implement some kind of system like this with, you know, artificial intelligence, electronic banking, all these surveillance state, you know, the loss of freedom we're seeing. You know, it's not out of the question that, you know, there could be something like this developed. You know, you've got China with their social credit scores. You know, we may have some kind of shadow system like that now, or at least, you know, there may be interest in doing something like that here too. You know, the Bible warns this would happen, and so maybe we're seeing the beginning signs of this. But, you know, nobody's, you know, there's no way to tell right now what exactly it might be, and nobody knows that. It's, you know, we're perhaps seeing signs of this.
After you wrote one of your other books, retired U.S. Army chaplain and Colonel David Giamona got a hold of you and asked you to help him write the book, which ended up being The Military Guide to Armageddon is all about. Now, we're looking at all kinds of things happening. As you were on hold during my news segment, we're talking about Afghanistan. What a disaster that is, Troy.
Yeah, I mean, that whole situation is a great tragedy. You know, many people are you know, being killed and tortured and these kind of things. And just it's just unbelievable to watch this kind of thing unfold. My co-author, Colonel Giamona, he's been doing quite a few media interviews about this. I talked to him today, and he said that, you know, if the president had listened to some of his military advisors, perhaps the situation could have been handled better. You know, there's a lot of questions about what's really happening here and why this has transpired like it is. So, it's just a terrible tragedy.
It sure is. So let's talk a little bit about The Military Guide to Armageddon. Tell me about that title.
So what happened is after the second book with Paul McGuire and I came out in early 2018, retired U.S. Army Chaplain Colonel David Giamona got a hold of me out of the blue, and he said he'd been working on a book then called The Making of a Warrior. And so he asked me to help him, you know, write this book and do interviews and that kind of thing. And it just struck me that, you know, because the first two books were trying to sort of wake up the country. You know, this stuff appears to be happening. We felt, you know, it was part of our job to help wake up people, but it didn't really seem to be happening. And so when the colonel called me, I thought to myself, I knew about these polls that show, you know, I think it's like 70-80% of the public highly respects the military. And so I thought to myself, if America and the church will listen to anybody about what's really happening, they'll listen to a retired colonel. And so I agreed to help him write this book. We ended up changing the title to The Military Guide to Armageddon, Battle-Tested Strategies to Prepare Your Life and Soul for the End Times. And what this book does is it takes you through all the different things the Bible talks about, how to get ready for something like this, if we really are moving into these times, you know, one of the key things, essentially, draw closer to God, you know, rely on the power of God to, you know, get us through this, faith. But we also have a chapter in there on just practical things on prepping, you know, the kind of, you know, physical, financial, you know, those kind of things you might need to weather any kind of disaster that's coming. And so this book sort of takes the colonel's three decades of military wisdom and, you know, what I've learned over a career in journalism and sort of combines it together and how we're going to, you know, navigate this period of time.
We have a responsibility in Afghanistan to those supporters who supported us for 20 years when we came in there. And we just seem to be leaving most of them behind at the mercy of the Taliban. And we know what kind of butchers they are, Troy.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely horrible. I mean, this sends the most terrible message you could possibly send to, you know, countries that are hostile towards us, China, Russia, North Korea, Iran. You know, is China, you know, could this expedite their plan to invade Taiwan? Could that result in some big war? Could we see more situations in Iraq? When you have a weak situation like this, where it's, you know, our military is being portrayed in a weak fashion, it just emboldens, you know, our enemies. And so the world just became a much more dangerous place because of, you know, the mistakes that are made in this situation.
How do you think Vladimir Putin would have handled the situation if planes hit tall buildings in Moscow? How do you think he would have reacted?
Oh, he'd react, you know, in a very strong bastion, I would imagine.
I think he would have leveled Tora Bora where they said bin Laden was hiding.
Yeah, but most certainly. We need strong leadership in our presidency and in our military right now, and we just don't have it, and it's a dangerous situation.
What is the Battle Ready Ministries?
So the Colonel and I formed Battle Ready Ministries to essentially go to different churches, different conferences, and sort of take people through this curriculum that we put together. It's a 2 to 3 day session, series of trainings. And help people get ready. Help sort of tell people what's sort of happening, and what the Bible says about how to get ready. And we've had a phenomenal response. At one church we spoke at, nearly the entire congregation came forward to dedicate their lives as battle-ready warriors of God. So we've been going around all year long, speaking at different places.
Now let's talk a little bit more about what you were talking about, the Mark of the Beast and the other situations that are happening. You've talked about that the greatest evidence of biblical prophecy might be the technology. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so for the first time in history, we actually have these technologies where you could have this Mark of the Beast system. You know, we've got the surveillance state. I mean, with social media and now the kind of censorship we're seeing, the sort of the deep state sort of revealing their hand on, it could just be some kind of, long-term plan to, gather tons of information. So, plus everywhere you go, there's cameras recording everything, the NSA and similar agencies around the world record, our text messages, our phone calls, and everything we pretty much do online. And so we live in the most intense surveillance state that's ever existed in history. I mean, Hitler, he couldn't even, what they had in Nazi Germany doesn't even compare to what potential, tyrant could access and use against us today. At the same time, with artificial intelligence, there's verses in the Bible that talk about like the image of the beast and worshiping the image and things like that, that, could that refer to some kind of, artificial intelligence, some kind of computer system, could the Antichrist be some kind of, artificial intelligence, transhuman, something along those lines. There's some speculation about that. And so, but the main thing is that for the first time in history, you have all these technologies. So you could actually have this system, and you could have a global, dictator that could control this system with the surveillance state and governments and, the whole apparatus we have. So I think that's one of the greatest evidences that, we very well maybe move it into this period of history that the Bible talks about.
Are there people who know that this is happening also, Troy, that are in the know and they're just making it happen?
I think what's happening here is that there's, because so many people are starting to wake up to, all these strange things happening in our world. I mean, the world's become a very strange and weird place in the last few years, and a lot of people have noticed it. And so I think what's part of what's happening is the elite or the deep state, whatever you want to call them, these people behind these secret societies and all the interconnected organizations that are part of this, the Bilderberg Group and the Council on Foreign Relations and all these different, there's United Nations, there's tons of them. And I think they've become concerned that people are waking up, and so maybe they're sort of accelerating their plan, appears to be what's happening now. And so I think that's part of what we're seeing now.
Does biblical prophecy talk about mass destruction?
So this is another thing. So also, for the first time in history, we really have the ability to blow up the entire world with nuclear bombs, and now we've got all kinds of these bioweapons and, biowarfare and chemical warfare and, bombs that can blow up, half the West Coast and the East Coast. And, the technologies we've developed are just, and the weaponry is, we have, the Bible talks about the elements burning with fervent heat, people like sort of melting in place. And Revelation 17:18 talks about, mystery Babylon being, destroyed with fire in 1 hour. And then it says that the merchants of the world who became rich off of trading with whoever this is, maybe, America is one of the speculations, from a distance watch her burn for fear of her torments, you know. So could that be, you know, like a description of some kind of nuclear attack? So there's all these things in the Bible that sort of refer to these kind of, you know, weapons that we now have for the first time. And a friend of mine, he was talking to a general at NORAD, and the general told him, we're looking at all these, like, major dangers in the world, you know, the Yellowstone supervolcano, nuclear war, extreme climate change, you know, the Cascadia subduction zone, just sort of on and on. And he said, we really don't understand why, you know, more bad things haven't happened, essentially. And he says, almost like some kind of invisible force is holding it back.
We've been lucky so far.
Yeah, we've been very lucky. And, you know, because there's been many times where we came very close to, you know, launching nuclear missiles, been many near misses, many mistakes made, and, you know, somehow we haven't done it. But now the world's becoming more dangerous on the nuclear front because you've got more, you know, hostile actors with these weapons, especially, you know, Iran. And, you know, we were under threat by North Korea just a couple of years ago. So very volatile situation in the world.
Troy, give out your website.
It's troyanderson.us and battle-ready.org.
All right. We've got them linked up for you at Coast to Coast AM. And your books are available all over the place, I assume, right?
Yeah, they're on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and pretty much anywhere books are sold.
You're working on another book with the Colonel, too, aren't you?
Yeah, so the Military Guide to Armageddon, it sold more copies in the first month than the publisher expected for the whole year. So they were happy, very happy with it. So they asked
Excellent.
To write the second book in the series. And this new book will come out next summer. It's going to delve into all the deception going on today, sort of a military guide to deception. And how do we navigate all the deception? It seems like almost everything we're seeing happening today is, you know, it's a propaganda, mind control, disinformation, psychological operations, you know, just on and on.
All right. Well, hold on, Troy. We're going to come back at the top of the hour and take phone calls with you. Plus, I want to get your take on COVID-19.